Welcome to Yarning Disability, the FPDN podcast. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. I'm a proud St. Paul Badu and Caribbean man from the Torres Strait. And I'm also the son of the designer of the Torres Strait Islander flag, Bernard Namok Sr., and an advocate for the First Peoples Disability Network. Join me now on Yarning Disability as we showcase First Nations people living with a disability, as well as their families and carers, and other industry professionals.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are warned that the following podcast may contain the voices and names of people who are deceased. The First Peoples Disability Network and the producers of this podcast recognise the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders past, present, and the future leaders of tomorrow. FPDN would like to acknowledge our founding elders and their lasting legacy, Uncle Lester Bostock and Auntie Gail Rankin, and acknowledge all First Peoples living with a disability.
Hi, I'm Carly Wallace. I'm a Dugalbarra Yidinji woman and the National Training and Engagement Manager at the First Peoples Disability Network. You've probably already heard my voice on other episodes of Yarning Disability. I'll be contributing stories to the podcast from time to time. On today's episode, I spoke to another First Nations person living with disabilities, Gomeroi man Matt Fink. In a busy Newtown street in Sydney, Matt owns his own tattoo studio called Something Original Tattoo. Matt's pretty successful. He's a former Australian Defence member, a businessman, and an accomplished tattoo artist who's won countless awards for his tattooing. What many people don't know about Matt is that he was recently diagnosed with adult autism and adult ADHD. I asked Matt recently about his disability journey. In the background of this conversation with Matt and I today, you'll hear some tapping. That's the sound of his dog Jacko. He's walking around the tattoo studio I spoke to him from. There's also a bit of tattooing sound in the background. And just a warning for listeners, this conversation may contain some coarse language.
I'm known sort of currently in the tattoo world as Matt Fink. Gov name is Matthew McMiles. Don't tell the world. I'm a Gomeroi man. Grandparents, like, and even my parents era, like, grew up around Glenelg before they came to, like, Cabra in Sydney.
Now you're a tattoo artist. What did you do before that?
I have done a lot of things. Renownedly career-wise, the biggest chunk. I was a sailor in the Navy. I was in the military for almost 11 years. Before tattooing, I've been tattooing now for 13 years in the industry anyway. How many other jobs? someone pointed it out, from a neurodivergent kind of lens as well. Someone else that I'm sort of friends with and follow up your way, actually, Nadine Kamali, put up a thing. So she's got ADHD and was like, look at all these different brands, all these career tangents and life tangents that I've had. And but somehow managed to successfully, be pretty good at all of them. It's just as long as your attention span can focus on that one thing. And then it's bored, move on, let's go. Other things that I've been professional basketball referee. I had my little time in the sun, my one season as a semi-professional basketball player for Sunshine Coast Breakers. Claiming, one of the things, I was an apprentice pastry chef while I was still in high school, so working at the bakery, bloody Landsborough.
So you've done all these things in your life, you've had a very successful career in lots of different areas, from military to now tattooing, selling phones. You've done a lot, so you've been able to get through life, but you are a person with a disability, should I say. Do you want to explain what they are?
Definitely disabilities, plural. So I'm juggling chronic pain all the time. I've got, I legit broke my spine several times while I was in the military. At least two of those went completely missed, they didn't catch it. It was only after I left that like the very first, I think it was a neurosurgeon that I was seeing, and yeah, it wasn't even a new scan. She's looking at the report from like scans from 08. She's going like, what did they do about this fracture and this fracture? I'm like, what fracture? Like, mm-hmm. they sent me the physio and sent me back to see. Like, so yeah, there's like being physically manipulated on vertebrae that was literally broken. Couple of Panadol and off you go, you know. So that's like actually, like my back is a key one, and I chose the wisest career to tangent into afterwards. Like, yeah, dingbat. Like, oh yeah, cool. Like, let's sit hunched over like a pretzel for hours on end, drawing pictures with needles on people, you know. it's like, but these are the things where when you don't have really a choice and options. Like when I left, there was a big, like a massive time span and vacuum between like what like the conditions were like when I left and when I actually got that support and follow up from DBA. So I didn't really get any of that until maybe 7 years down the track after I'd already been out.
Veterans Australia, for those that don't know, DBA is what the support network, I guess, you get once you leave the military. Yeah,
that's the idea. Yeah. Whereas, yeah, like my sort of personal hierarchy had essentially gone like, nah, like you're getting kicked out because of your weight, even though the two were very kind of intertwined. And even the doctors at the time said that. They're like, the first time I had weight issues was the first time I had major back issues, and I couldn't move, couldn't train, couldn't do anything. And that's was always the ebb and flow from there on of my sort of injuries and pain management and weight fluctuation. So whenever it was that bad that I've just got that kind of body type, doesn't matter what I eat, I have to physically move my body. And if I don't move my body or I can't, then I gain weight. That's just how my body works.
Mine too.
Yeah. So, that's on the physical side of things, that's the main one. But like pretty much every other like overuse kind of thing that came with the territory and sort of military service as well, like shoulders are busted, wrists are busted, knees are busted, ankles are busted. And brain is busted. There's like, yeah, lots of things. I think it didn't come until much later when I had what I now know was like either a combination of like a major depressive episode, but also leading into one of the other more recent diagnoses that I've got. I only found out last year at the ripe old age of 43 that I'm autistic and have ADHD. So I got both of those diagnoses last year as well. So I've been diagnosed prior to that with PTSD, then complex PTSD, major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, alcohol use disorder, and yeah. Those are the headlines, and there's a whole bunch of footnotes in there as well. Well, yeah, like I was thinking about it like the other day after we were talking in general, and like thinking about as much as like my journey, particularly with my mental health, has like been massive in like sort of the last 4 to 5 years. How even that wouldn't have been possible, like. Obviously it's a double-edged sword because like there's like giant chunks of causation as well. So like literally I wouldn't be where I am now and like able to function and walk and talk and even be alive possibly and a member of society if I didn't have like my DBA stuff from my military service covering that mental health cost. You know, because like I talk to lots of other people, particularly mob, but like literally anyone that's struggling with their mental health and like what those barriers are like and what that, you know, getting a healthcare plan and like get the little 10 sessions and that's it. Like I couldn't possibly imagine going through the same struggles that I have been through and trying to navigate that side of it as well. Like, really, like the progress that I've made has only been possible because I had that cover, but mind you, I only had that cover because they did a tidy job of breaking me in the first place, you know? Like,
so those have come, those diagnoses, a lot from your process with DVA, or has the autism and ADHD diagnosis come from you actively seeking that out? How did that part of it come around?
The pursuit of remedying my mental health stuff was entirely driven by me. It's just fortunate that it was funded by my health cover that I now have through DVA. That's like their main involvement. It's not like they've actively provided support. It's just there because I now have the cover because I pursued like all my claims for that stuff. And it's more so the work that I've put in all those other spheres, like both depression and PTSD and anxiety particularly, that like achieving all those goals and like bring those things down to like, I don't know whether you're familiar, like you'll do sort of periodic assessments with your psych just to sort of assess where your levels are at with everything. And like in like the last sort of 6 to 12 months, when I've done those for all those other things that were these major part of my life and head issues and everything, all the levels for those things were now down below what would be considered the thresholds for diagnosis, which is great. What that did, however, was like showing this giant beacon of light on all these other symptoms that were still there, you know? So because there was just this cloud and shroud of all these issues going on, very specific like traits and stuff that were to do with like being autistic and ADHD, weren't that noticeable just because like there's a whole bunch of them that are kind of crossovers anyway. So it's like, oh, you're like that, but that's just because you have PTSD, or oh, you're like that, it's just because you're depressed.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, cool. We didn't take it away, but we like lowered our levels of all those things. And not only is that thing still there, it's now much like louder and brighter because you've reduced the levels of those other things. And yeah, so it just like kind of very much put new scope and perspective on so many things in my life prior, and even some of those things that had been put down as being like purely like depression or purely PTSD or stuff like that. So it's like, all right, well, you've clearly done the work in those things, and now not only are these things still an issue, they're like more of an issue. But yeah, like even to take an analogy that pinch it from like my pain specialist, like when you're sort of spot checking certain things, like addressing anxiety, like I got at one stage, got like, I can't remember what it's called, it's like nerve ablation. So they literally burn off the nerves in certain parts of your spine to help relieve the pain. So I had that and it was very helpful. But what that did, because now that it's literally the knowledge is gone, it literally just turned the switch off, you know, so it's not sending that signal to your brain anymore. Now that that switch is turned off, you can notice all of the other things that were also causing you pain, but, and now they seem like worse because the worst one has been turned off.
The diagnosis, I guess, of your autism and your ADHD for years and years was kind of being masked underneath PTSD and all of these other psychosocial disabilities that have come out, I guess, evolved from your time in the military with your physical injuries and things that are now, I guess, impairments, right, for you to live your life with. What was it like, I guess, to get to this age now and go, oh, I've got autism and ADHD? What was that like?
Well, it's literally still a liquid process that's kind of happening now. And in talking to some other friends of mine that were also like certainly not as late as me, but definitely like late diagnosed in that, like they only found out in adulthood that it was like, you know, a good sort of 2 to 3 year journey thereafter of really figuring themselves out and finding themselves and like learning to love and embrace their true self, because so much of both of those conditions is like surrounded by like masking, like the idea of like, yeah, like just putting on the face that like causes you least distress and like rejection and hurt in the world, you know, they're very much commingled kind of factors, not even just military stuff, but like childhood stuff growing up, because like that's where the sort of more complex PTSD sort of side of things came from, like a very early age. So like I kind of learned to mask and dissociate heavily and do what I needed to do to fit in from a very early age. So like, right, like what's the path of least resistance where like, you know, I'm not going to get hardened and like, you know, siblings and like I can move through the world and like not not cause waves, you know, because to be other or to be different was definitely doing that.
What's the earliest kind of memory where you thought, oh, there's, I might be a little bit different, you know, like I think a bit differently or I feel differently because of your disability?
There's definitely signs all along the way, but I don't know what they were putting it down to. You know, as a kid growing up in the 80s, like that none of these things or awareness was there, or even if it was like very much like the idea or that label was very much shunned. So no one would definitely want to like have anything to do with that, even if it was something. And like knowing what it costs now, because I had to pay out of pocket to get that assessment and diagnosis, I can only imagine it would have been, because it would have been so much more niche if it had existed then, it would have been a giant expense that they, even if they had wanted to, like my olds wouldn't have been able to afford it, you know? So, there were signs at a very early age, like I could almost read before I could walk. Like, so I was reading like at a high level from like age 2. And then that was one of my major both escapes, but also like hyper-focused kind of things. Like I read everything in the house. We have, you know, the ridiculous giant full set of like Collier's encyclopedias. Like when I ran out of everything else, I read the Bible and the phone books and the everything. Like I just had to consume those. Like I was literally that kid walking around reading a book. Those things and like this, the stigmas that came with it, with realizing that not everyone was like that and not everyone found that fun, were some of pretty much kind of straight away, like in that school environment. Recently came across my dad passed like Christmas before last, and we were like going through all the stuff. He was a massive hoarder. So there's like literally anything and everything that we'd ever left there or even from childhood was there. So like found old school reports and stuff. And there's like a particularly pivotal moment. I was in grade 4. The report card was literally both the teacher and the principal vocalizing how they were frustrated by the fact that they considered me lazy and inattentive, but that I'd also still aced all the tests and all the assignments, like, which is like, you know, a testament to the spicy brain. I've done what you required. I just didn't do it the way that you wanted me to do it. And it's not my fault that you can't comprehend that my little brain could do it already. Basically, like that was a whole thing. And I got dragged to school and like credit to him. It was like one of the few times my old boy was like came hard for that stuff. Like he's like, whatever was said, like I could tell that the teacher was actively sweating, like, you know, like after he exited the room, and then magically I got skipped the whole grade.
Yeah, that education system now, I think even like you said you grew up in the 80s, but I think that education system hasn't, it's getting better, but I think like ADHD in our community is not really highlighted enough. It's not talked about. And I guess because of research, you know, in the last few years and diagnosis, and like you said, that diagnosis process is really hard for parents, especially our mom, who may not have the idea of what to pick up on for our kids, or how, you know, there's pediatricians that are really hard, like there's long lines, like it's a societal issue. But for our mob, we don't see disability, right? So we just see the kid as, this kid hardhead. They're hard-headed, or he's just real smart, but he don't put an effort. Like, did you have, like, I guess a bit of that, like, growing up?
All of that, yeah. like, he's a smart ass, but he's lazy, and, you know, like, all of those ones, you know. Like, I failed to see, and I still, like, met up with those kind of ideals, even, you know, in adult life, you know, particularly in that sort of military environment, where it'd be like, you always have to be seen to be doing something. It's like, all right, they can look like they're working. Like, why though? If I've been efficient and done all my jobs, why can't I be playing sport right now? Yeah. Like, why am I punished for... yeah, like doing all my shit? Because like that was what would happen if they were going, oh, you finished yours, you can go help them over there. I'm like, why though? They had the same amount of work that I did. Like, that's, yeah, like the kind of thing that would go on at like that younger age as well.
So how's this diagnosis now, I guess, of autism and ADHD, how's that changed your life day to day now?
One, it gave me some degree of validation in the actual life and process that I had living, that it wasn't, you know, like what I drummed up in my head, you know, like that I just literally felt like that little bit alien and never quite fit in on a number of levels, both sort of either familiarly as well as sort of socially as well. For the most part, like it's given a new perspective to a whole bunch of old experiences as well, and sort of not just from my own personal thing, but from that thing that you were talking about with our olds not necessarily being able to like recognize the signs or acknowledge the signs, because, you know, you just adapt to how people be and how they are. Like an indicator as to why it might have been so difficult for me to even notice, even if I'd had no other issues and just been, you know, little Audie me growing up and like supported but had no other issues like that, you know, affected my mental health. Like why it would have taken me so long to realize still, because I've come to realize there's so many people in my friend circle and familial circle that are all some kind of neurospicy as well. So they're boosting around thinking that their way is normal. And so if you're raised by people that are also in that state or some kind of way, then that's all you're going to think is normal, you know, like. Even I reconnected with one of my uncles that I haven't talked to in about 20 years, and I'm sort of telling him about the diagnosis and like just you know, the footnotes, like some of the things that would be, you know, the indicators that made me start to think, you know, like maybe that's the thing. And yeah, you know, I'm rattling all these things off, and he's like, oh, everyone's like that. And I'm like, got something to tell you. If you think that everyone, that's what everyone's like, then you'll probably like it too. I think, like you mentioned before, with parents getting their kids assessed, that's how a bunch of the people that I know as adults only found out that way, because their kids were getting assessed and they had to backtrack and do the whole assessment again because they were helping the kids fill the thing out. And like, oh, what's a normal amount of dinner, like dinner, and like what's, you know, blah blah blah, and their guidance was, yeah, this is normal. Only when the doctors like stepped in and wait, what's a normal amount, like what's not a normal thing, and then they, you know, rattled off, they're like, I think we need to separate you two, and we're gonna give you a form to fill out as well, and we're going to give them a form to fill out. We're going to start this again
because of our mob with disability, and just in our culture, we are dealing with so many things right all the time, whether it's poverty, housing, justice, health. Like we're up against all of these things because of colonization, right? Like that came here, and that's what the effect is. So when it comes to disability, it's kind of like at the bottom of the stuff. We don't have time for that. We don't have the capacity sometimes to even recognize these things because we're dealing with first basis type of survival stuff every day. So going and getting a diagnosis or looking into things is probably not a priority, right? And it's also another stigma. It's also another label that our mob don't want. So like, how was that, you know, you said you went and actively got that diagnosis yourself. What should be in place for mob? Because ADHD is not on the NDIS list, so why should they go and get a diagnosis for that?
Well, yeah, I think particularly if, like, say that's your only thing that's impacting you, I feel like it would be extremely valuable, at least if you can get enough support and the right people to see, which I know in and of itself is such a hurdle and such a journey. I had those issues myself, like I had a like super, super negative experience with the first psychiatrist that I ended up being stuck seeing. And that was a little bit of an unfortunate trap, you know, that was not caused by DVA, but it was like essentially the reason why I ended up having to be stuck with that person for so long was DVA related, because my mental health claims were already in. And they're like, all right, you've submitted them with this doctor. If you change doctors, the process starts again. You know, like it'll go back to the very beginning. You'll have to get all those reports from that person again. So I ended up, you know, stuck with this person who was actually impacting me negatively as well because of their biases, specifically around race. He like would repeatedly, even after me highlighting it and saying that had, you know, that it was an issue for me, he would constantly refer to me as part Aboriginal, and I'd be like, which part, you know, like what the fuck are you on about? Like the crowning glory of his diagnostic assessments was telling me that I was only depressed because I was an alcoholic, and I was only an alcoholic because I was Aboriginal. And that's the one time I wasn't part Aboriginal. Wow. You know, I'm like, okay, cool, like sick, you can get in the bin. You know, like those kinds of negative experiences I've heard echoed by so many people. You know, if your, you know, healthcare professionals, providers are coming into it with these biases and opinions already that they're then imposing on you, like I can see very easily why people would get disheartened and go, no, fuck that, it's not for me. I'm entirely aware of that privilege that I have had, like at least since having all of my claims in, that I have that support and that ability to choose who I work with, and, you know, have the privilege and benefit that it's paid for. Like I said before, like earlier, I wouldn't have possibly even been here if I didn't have that. Like my current psychologist that I see, like I was seeing her weekly for about 2 years, and I can't imagine what that cost burden would have been like. So few people have that level of access and support. At the same time, when you do find the right ones, like it's because of that psychologist that like fully sees me, hears me, knows what I want and where I want to go from where I'm currently at, that, you know, it's through their benefit and their support that I did pursue both the autism and the ADHD diagnosis. And also within that, the referrals that I got, I worked really hard to get off all the laundry list of both head and pain and antipsychotic meds and stuff that these other people had me on. So I worked really hard to work through my shit and also get off all those things. And in that pursuit, like the specific ADHD doctor that she's referred me to, his approaches are about helping you manage and modify your lifestyle as best you can to, yeah, both work with your symptoms and also, yeah, maximize them without just medication, like intervention. Yeah. And I know it's totally not putting shade on taking meds. It's extremely helpful and even was for me at the time. It got me to the place where I could make the decision that I didn't want or need them anymore, you know.
Yeah. We kind of talk about that in FPDN and about the medical model of disability, where it's psychiatrists and doctors and that health model that prescribe and see it from that medical scope. And sometimes, yeah, that there is entrenched racism, right, within the health. And you talked about that around a psychiatrist and your DVA journey, pulling you part Aboriginal, like these things that are barriers that are just seeing our people as something to diagnose and to treat, right, as opposed to a social model of care that can work side by side with medication and other things, but a social side of culture and you know, socially on what helps you with your lifestyle. So like, what are some of the things that move away from, I guess, just medication or just being treated for it, and what helps you with your disabilities, your physical disabilities, but also your mental disabilities?
Just on a personal level, and this is something that I was doing already, but I realize now as soon as it's like through that lens and that framework of understanding how both autism and ADHD work and impact your brain hole. Like I was already very much kind of almost micromanaging my time. I have everything planned out, like in my Google Calendar, whether it's yarns with you or whether it's coffee with a mate or whether it's appointments or like both personal, medical, you know, work-related tattoo appointments, any of that. If it's not in the calendar, it doesn't exist. That's kind of how my brain has adapted and worked, and it's been like the best move for me. It takes away those like sort of mind blanks and like memory issues that happen sometimes, because it's like a hilarious double-edged sword that, yeah, like I have almost definitely part of like my autistic side of my brain. I have like an exceptionally good memory as far as like bordering on photographic, and it's kind of what made me good at doing school stuff, because it's like, yeah, like if I've read it, then I know it. So I'll be like, boom, like speed read a thing just before a test and like bang, ace it kind of thing.
Oh,
like,
superpower. Yeah. I wish I had that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then things like PTSD and ADHD give you massive bouts of brain fog where your memory sucks, you know, like it's like for day-to-day things, you know, like, so yeah, like remembering like those like sort of oral commitments or even just like life things in the house basis, you know, staying on top of chores and all that stuff, like that's where I sort of dip and suck at life doing those things. And it's like, yeah, like that's sort of part of the masking and the facade, I guess, I'm real good at, you know, like maintaining like my floss level in the public eye. And then benefit of that sort of calendar system as well, I've kind of got dedicated days and time frames during my week, every week, which are, don't nobody call me, don't nobody talk to me, I'm gonna be in the doona, you know, and day of rest, like actively needed from both like a mental exhaustion standpoint and a physical one, because that's what I've also sort of found out. Yeah, the spectrum side of things, like it's physically exhausting doing that sort of mental, you know, neurotypical dance among the world, you know, like, you know, strap on that mask and go and pretend to be a normal. Like doing that all the time, just that is exhausting, let alone actually physically doing anything that's exerted as well on top, you know. Yeah. So it just adds another layer of understanding to my like both my sort of chronic pain stuff as well. Like it's like, all right, like, okay, how much of that, you know, was actually physical, and how much of it was mental that manifested as physical, as far as some of the things that are just like a little bit more subtle and helpful that I've started doing via the ADHD doc, is I've got like these cool, like Riddick looking red lens goggle/glasses that I wear at night. And I've got these like red, like not strictly red, but like by default they're red because they're a bulb designed to diffuse like blue and green light, which is like artificial light from screens and like lights and stuff like that. So all of that stuff is geared around trying to help reset your circadian rhythms so your brain knows to relax and try and go to sleep. It certainly on its own wouldn't have any impact on my cooked noodle, but in the accompaniment with the meds that I do take at night now, and holistically, the way that I liken it to just having that lamp and the glasses on, like say if I need to go downstairs, go to the bathroom, get a snack, whatever, like leaving them on, it's like, you know, that kind of warm fuzzy feeling just before you're about to drift off to sleep, whether it's like in front of the telly or in bed, it keeps you in that pocket by not having that stark like white, blue, green light introduced, because that like that physically does wake your body up. Keeps you in that warm fuzzy zone. So when you get back to bed, yeah, that much easier to stay in that pocket and get into that pocket.
I love the way that you speak about your disability, you know, like, because that word disability can be very stigmatizing. And I love that our mob are starting to be creative around how we speak about ourselves and our mob. And yours, you know, you're saying things like spicy noodles, spicy brain. You've said a few other things in there. What else do you describe yourself?
Well, that's my brain hole.
Your brain hole, that was the one I meant.
You know, so.
Yeah. And you know what, that's that breaking down of like just normalizing it, right? Like there's so many people in the world that are in our community, especially that are getting by and trying to live with their differences, you know, and it's up to us to make people feel included and that culture of inclusion. What's something, I guess, that you'd want to tell other mob that may be feeling a bit different or may have, you know, similar disabilities to yourself that, you know, you as someone who is successful in life that is doing lots of things, and I'm sure some days it doesn't feel like it, you know, or you might have your down days where you feel like you're not the best, but overall, you know, you're in a pretty good place. You own your business. You're doing really great things in community. So what's something you could share with other mob?
I think the main thing is, yeah, definitely if you have those inclinations or concerns about your mental health, don't be ashamed. And it doesn't have to necessarily be someone professional as such, you know, start by having an honest yarn with, you know, your close mates and talking to them honestly about things and how it's impacting you or how you're feeling. But there's certainly plenty of like grassroots kind of support that are trying to do that kind of thing and fill that gap as well. Mental health for mob, if you follow that Instagram handle, they're a mental health nurse, so they've got a lot of qualifications, but they're not quite what, you know, a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but they are trained in that kind of care, and they are mob and they care, you know. And like, so that's something to keep an eye out for, as, and they're certainly not the only one, but they're like the first one that comes to mind. So there are options out there from both a cost effective kind of point of view and also from that cultural point of view, with not concerns that, you know, people aren't going to get your issues or just not be able to relate. The main thing as well, like, I definitely felt on the outside and other, like you kind of mentioned, even though despite, you know, all of my comparative success, you know, despite all the hurdles, I think it's only after reaching this sort of, I guess, ultimate conclusion, like I feel like I've like beaten the big boss in the final game, you know, like I'm like, sick, I got to the end. Did I win mental health? I don't know. But because of that, it's given me fresh perspective and a kindness to myself that I didn't have before, because I was always so like the harshest that anyone else was on me. I was like 10 times harder on myself. Knowing these things about yourself, you can learn to embrace and be kinder to yourself and be more your more authentic self, which is like all any of us can want.
That was Gomeroi man and tattoo artist Matt Fink sharing his story on yarning disability.
If anything you heard in this week's podcast episode was distressing for you, there is help available. You can contact 13YARN on 13 92 76 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36 or Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Thanks for listening to Yarning Disability. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. Follow FPDN on our social media accounts to stay up to date with future episodes and information. You can also visit our website at www.fpdn.org.au.